You're listening to the Brown Girl Podcast, a new show discussing various cultural and mainstream topics that impact our community from the perspectives of South Asian women. The show also aims to highlight South Asian women creators, business owners, and pioneers who are paving the way for future generations. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever your podcasts are found. If you're on Instagram, give us a follow at thebrowngirl_podcast to stay up to date on new releases and stay engaged with our community. Thanks for tuning in. Hi guys, Julie here, host of the Brown Girl Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We are in the month of December. This is episode 11. It is the last episode of the year. So I was originally going to take a break from the podcast this month and just use it as time to rest and plan for 2022, but some of my travel plans changed because of COVID. Okay, so this episode is basically a recap of 2021, and then we're going to talk about leveling up on mindset, money, and health in 2022. Okay, so I had a whirlwind of a year. I moved, I started a new job, then I quit that job, went back to my old job. I traveled a bunch. I started this podcast and I wrapped up my first year in my nutrition coaching business. And then I kind of moved again, not officially, but I've been kind of nomading in another state the last few months, and TBD how long I stay here, what happens exactly. You know, but like so much happened this year, and I think about this past year, and honestly, I had no plan for 2021. I'm normally really big on goal setting for the year and envisioning the future and writing those goals down, and I didn't really do any of that going into 2021. I'm sure a lot of us didn't. You know, we were still in the onset of the pandemic. Or it was the first winter of the pandemic. And then on a personal front, I also went through this breakup that totally gutted me. So I was just not in a good headspace for pretty much all of December last year and going into January and February of this year. So I most definitely did not bother with sitting down and like thinking through my goals for the year or anything like that. I was just waking up every day and trying to get through the day. You know, I'm so grateful that like so many good things happened to me in 2021, but at the same time, it feels like I just let 2021 happen. And I really want to step into 2022 feeling like I have a little bit more of a game plan under my belt. And that's what I want to focus this episode on. I think that time between Christmas and the new year is the perfect time to think through some of those things. There is so much power in sitting down and being intentional about what you want the year to look like and writing down very specific goals with an actionable plan so you can bring that to life. In previous years, I would write down various goals in like different facets of my life, financial goals, giving goals, career goals, fitness goals, and even other personal goals like travel goals or reading goals. And like some of what you've written down will probably change throughout the year, and that's totally okay. But I think having some objectives written down is super important so that, you know, you can look back at the end of the year and see what you accomplished, what you didn't, what changed along the way. And it can make a world of a difference in terms of helping you stay focused and knowing what your priorities are throughout the year and tracking toward that. I also learned that it makes a huge difference to not only write down your goals, but also putting them up front and center somewhere so that you have a recurring reminder of all the things that you want to manifest in your life. I know some people like to do vision boards. I've attempted to do them in the past, but I don't know, the mechanics of actually doing it just don't feel very practical to me. Like, I don't have magazines laying around. I don't want to go and buy them so that I can cut it up. I never got into vision boards, but if you're into them, that's great. I know they work great for some people. There's also online vision boards that you can do instead. So you can find templates on Canva or Pinterest or other similar tools and create your vision board and even set that as your wallpaper to your desktop or laptop so that you have that thing in front of you that's constantly motivating you and inspiring you throughout the year. Personally, I don't do vision boards, but I'm really into whiteboards. So I got this like massive whiteboard that I ordered from online, and I have it sitting on the floor of my room, and I see this thing every single day when I wake up. And I have sections on there of like different top level goals that I want to accomplish in different areas of my life. And then I have space on there as well to just brainstorm and jot down ideas when they come up to help me execute on any of those things that I've written down. And I've just found that whiteboarding has allowed me to think through different things that I want to do in what feels like a more like organized and doable fashion. I think that the more you're reminded of these goals, the more that they sink into your mind and the more your mind actively starts to look out for opportunities associated to those goals or objectives that you've written down. So make sure, you know, you're doing some goal setting and documenting them in some fashion that works for you. Super important. Okay, so with that being said, I wanted to shift gears a little and talk about three specific areas, mindset, money, and health, that I think are super important to develop good habits and goals and systems around. So I would definitely implore you to set some intentions and goals in each of these areas as you think about what you want your 2022 to look like. So I like to think of these as pillars almost. So the first pillar is mindset, and specifically adopting a growth mindset. So any coach or professional who's out there whose purpose is to help improve your life in some way, shape, or form, whether it's with fitness or finances, your nutrition, relationships, whatever it is, they will most likely tell you that it starts with having a growth mindset. So having a growth mindset means you are someone who actively embraces this idea that you can evolve and grow. You believe that your skills and abilities are all things that can be improved if you work on it. Whereas people with fixed mindset believe that the qualities and skills that they currently have are what they are and they can't be changed. Well, I was born like this and I can't do anything about it. This is just who I am. There's a huge difference between those two types of beliefs or mindsets. There was a Harvard Business Review article that I found that talked about how there's research that shows that people who have adopted a growth mindset go on to achieve so much more in life than people with fixed mindsets. This is because they worry less about looking smart and they put more energy into learning. It goes on to read that people with growth mindsets are lifelong learners. They embrace mistakes and failures as part of the learning process, and they know how to accept feedback in a constructive fashion and apply that into their life. And it just got me thinking how much truth there is to that. And it's something that I've personally witnessed and experienced in my own life. And I wanted to share a very specific example on this topic of growth mindset for this episode. So for the longest time, I was terrified of public speaking. Like, I had a legitimate fear of public speaking. I was not good at it. I would get uncontrollably nervous. I remember, like, I hated group projects in college because there'd always be some kind of presentation component at the end. And even when I started my corporate career, like, I remember I would have trouble saying 5 words in a staff meeting of 10 people. And it was like something that for many years of my adult life, like, it would give me so much anxiety because I would think about my future and I'd think like, oh my gosh, how am I supposed to be successful when I have this, like, what felt to me like such a paralyzing fear. So fast forward a couple years later, I was probably 26 at the time. I was living in Seattle And I had always been into fitness. Like, I enjoyed working out. And I discovered this like bougie boutique fitness studio that I loved going to, and I became a regular at. I would invite friends to join me. And it was just such a blast taking classes there. And I remember at one point they started announcing how they were looking to fill some instructor positions, and if you were interested, to drop a note to the front desk. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, that would be so cool to be an instructor here. But the idea just scared me. I didn't think I would be cut out for it because of my fear of public speaking. Because this was one of those intense group fitness classes where, there's 20 to 30 people in the room, the instructors are on a mic, the music is blaring, there's like LED lights flashing, and it was like, it has that intense dance rave kind of feel. And you, as the instructor, like people are looking to you to be that person that creates energy and excitement and enthusiasm for the hour, and someone who can get the crowd going and keep people on their toes and things like that. And it's almost like a performance that you have to put on. And for someone who's been terrified of public speaking for the entirety of my adult life up until then, I remember thinking, there's no way I could be good at that. And so for several weeks, I'd go to class, I'd hear the same announcement, and I would tell myself the same fixed limiting belief of you're not a good public speaker, so you wouldn't be good at that. And after a few weeks, the owner of the studio, who I had a connection with because of something else, she reached out to me and was like, hey, Julie, we're still looking for instructors. I think you could be really good at this. You have a passion for, living a healthy lifestyle, and it could be a great stepping stone to pursuing something more down the line. Like, would you be interested in this role? And this was after weeks of like hearing the announcement, feeling like I wanted to do this, but I could never be good at it. I think we went back and forth a little, and at some point it just kind of dawned on me, like, okay, Julie, you're 25 or 26 years old. You've probably got another at least 50 or 60 years of life left. It's either you take this as an opportunity to get over this fear, or you stay stuck forever. And at one point, I just said, okay, and I went for it. And that literally was one of the best decisions I ever made in life. And it was really hard at the beginning. Like, I was not a good group fitness instructor. Like, I remember it, like at the beginning, like someone wrote a bad review about my class, and it was right when I started, so I was already like insecure about it, the whole thing to begin with, and like just didn't really feel confident leading these classes. And seeing that review totally crushed my soul. It took months and months of being bad to get good. It was months of blood, sweat, and tears. I can't even count to you how many times I went into the studio after hours to practice teaching a class on a mic to an empty room. Your confidence is something that is very evident in your voice, and it took so long for me to find my teaching voice and to feel confident on the mic and to feel that amazing adrenaline rush of just totally rocking a class. And I always think of that experience as so formative for me. Like, teaching classes, for me, it wasn't just a side gig I had teaching classes. It was symbolic of me finally overcoming this lifelong fear of mine. And that single-handedly changed the trajectory of my life. It increased my confidence tenfold. It gave me the boldness to try my hand at other things that I thought I wouldn't be good at. It opened the door for so many other opportunities and things that I was able to like partake in or lead or initiate or do. And now I do some version of speaking so regularly that I don't even flinch anymore. And like none of that would have been possible if I kept telling myself that I was not a good public speaker. I think we often limit our own potential because of these self-limiting fixed stories that we tell ourselves. And it's completely possible to rewrite your story. So, you know, as you think about 2022, like if there are things that have been on your heart to pursue, but you've been holding yourself back because of this fixed mindset, like this is your year to change that. Just because you're not a morning workout person today doesn't mean that you don't have the ability to become a morning workout person. You can do all these things, but you have to first believe that you can change your current state. Okay, so I know that was a lot, but hopefully you took something away from that. So moving on to the next pillar, which is financial literacy. Financial literacy is something that I feel so strongly about. It's so important, especially for women. There is a difference between financial independence and financial literacy. Financial independence is making your own money, having enough income to pay for your own living expenses and not have to be dependent on anyone else, which is great. That is all really good. But financial literacy is taking it one step further and actively managing your debt and investing your money in order to secure a lifetime of financial security. This is a piece that I feel is really lacking, especially amongst South Asian women. So I found an interesting statistic that said only 26% of women invest in the stock market. And that gap is even wider, specifically within the South Asian demographic. If you are not investing your money, you are losing money. Inflation in this last year was 6.8%, which is a staggering rate. The interest that you get from letting your money sit in a bank account is less than 1%. So you actively lose money if you are not investing because inflation is eroding the purchasing power of your cash. Okay, so this is something I had no guidance on growing up. Just seeing how my parents lived and like, money was always a source of tension in our household, and a lot of it was stemming from lack of education on how to make financially sound choices for their future. I remember even when I graduated and started making my own money for the first time, anytime the topic of investing for the future came up, my parents would give like the worst financial advice to me. It's like so bad, I don't even want to repeat it, but it's truly because at the time, they just did not know any better. Being financially literate is so important because you just never know what can happen. Your spouse passes away, you go through a divorce, you get laid off. You know, just in the last month, like we saw, it was all over the news, the CEO of Better or Better.com abruptly laid off 900 people through a Zoom call. And these were all people who had a performance review that same week and had no clue that this was coming. These are the realities of life today. And it's so important to create enough financial security for yourself so that you can be stable if any of these things happen. Okay, so I wanted to lay out like a really high level framework to consider on financial literacy. But before I start, I also want to acknowledge that there is a privilege piece and a poverty piece that I don't want to overlook. Okay, there's no amount of budgeting that can lift people out of poverty. And I think that's really important to remember when you're talking about money. Like if you are born with both parents and you graduated college, you're already in a pool that is much luckier than most people on the planet. So I don't want it to seem like I'm just saying, you know, do these five things and you'll be fine, or four things and you'll be fine. This is advice for if you are in that boat of financial independence, but financial literacy is what you need to strive toward next. So I'm going to lay out a really high level framework. The first is you want to set up an emergency account that covers 3 to 6 months. So stash away in a savings account what would be the equivalent of 3 to 6 months of living expenses. So that would be your basic rent, groceries, utilities, and any other necessities. Then you want to pay down your high interest debt. Okay, so credit card debt is truly one of the worst financial mishaps because the interest on a lot of credit cards these days is so crazy, like 15, 20, 25%. So if you have a high interest card and you're carrying a balance, you want to try to eliminate that as quickly as possible. Okay. Next, number three is investing in your retirement. If you work for a corporation or an employer that offers a 401k match, it's so important to max out that match. It is a huge blessing to have a 401k match, and any contributions that are made towards your 401k are tax deferred, meaning you get an immediate break on your taxes. After your 401k, there's other retirement accounts that you can take advantage of, or like IRAs, which stands for individual retirement accounts. A Roth IRA is a really common type of IRA. I believe you can contribute up to $6,000 a year as the max. And there's also some other income limitations to be aware of that you can find on the IRS website. But contributions toward your Roth IRA would be considered after-tax money. So that means the money that you're contributing, you've already paid taxes on it. So when you go to withdraw later, you don't pay taxes on it then. Once you have a good handle on those three things, which are saving up for an emergency fund, paying down your high interest debt, and investing in your retirement, the next step is you want to start investing your money, period. Do not leave your money in a savings account at a bank. Again, because of how high inflation is, you are actively losing money by not investing. The stock market has historically provided returns of about 10% or so since its inception. So you're going to be much better off putting your money into the stock market than leaving it in a savings account. If you think about rich people who are rich, they stay rich because they figure out ways to make their money work for them while they sleep, and they do that through investing. Okay, so don't sleep on that. I know I've had conversations with friends or other people in my circle, and they're like, you know, I don't know where to start. I don't know which stocks to pick. How do you know what's a good stock to pick? Investing is not about picking individual stocks. You can certainly invest in the stock market without having to pick individual stocks. Okay, a great place to start is with index funds or ETFs. You can Google the technical differences between the two, but they're very similar in that they're essentially funds that pool together a bunch of different investments of stocks and bonds into a singular purchase. So, for example, instead of buying individual stocks of Apple or individual stocks of Microsoft, you can invest into an ETF that's based on the S&P 500. Okay, that's just one example of a fund you can purchase. There's so many different types of index funds, but that kind of fund would essentially pool together hundreds of companies that exist on the S&P 500 index and bundle that into like a single investment purchase. So if you're like, what the heck is the S&P 500? It's basically a category or an index of the largest 500 publicly traded companies in the United States. In fact, that is what Warren Buffett's investing advice is that he's been giving for years for most ordinary, regular people, is to keep it simple and invest in a low-cost S&P 500 index fund. Because how your investment performs is going to be based on the overall performance of hundreds of individual companies that exist within that index that you've selected. And because it's so diversified, it's a pretty low risk and safe way to invest. Okay. And so again, there's like literally hundreds of different kinds of index funds and ETFs out there. And honestly, it can be so overwhelming, such to a point that you end up not doing anything because you don't know where to start. So if you're like, I just need a starting point, a safe and low cost fund that I use is the Vanguard S&P 500 ETF. The ticker for that is VOO. And you should be able to do a quick search of that on whichever brokerage platform you use, whether that's Vanguard or anything else. And it's an easy way to buy a slice of the market at a pretty low. Okay. Other ways to invest your money: you can trade individual stocks. There's so many platforms out there that offer free trades: Robinhood, Fidelity, TD Ameritrade, are some of the ones that come to mind, but you can, again, do a quick Google search and compare the differences between all of these different options. Okay, cryptocurrency, real estate, which I'm also a huge fan of. If you're interested in learning about my personal journey with real estate investing, check out episode 4 and episode 8. Also like index funds and ETFs, like I mentioned. Okay, probably so many others that I didn't mention, but those are some of the most common vehicles for investing. Some really good books that I would recommend reading are I Will Teach You How to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi and Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. So the last pillar that I wanted to talk about is health and being really serious about taking care of your health. This is one that I've grown to feel really passionate about over the years, because growing up, the importance of taking care of your body and exercising and eating well were not emphasized as a priority. And unfortunately, that is really common across South Asian communities. Chances are, if you're a South Asian listening, you probably have at least a handful of people in your immediate family circles who have diabetes, who have high blood pressure or high blood sugar. These things are so common that it's almost like we've just come to accept that as a norm. We've come to accept this false idea that X disease is just part of our genetics, and if that happens to us, then we'll default to taking medication to control it, rather than thinking about what kind of lifestyle changes can I make early on to prevent that in the first place. I remember many years ago, I was at a family party and someone in my family said to me, "Why do you work out so much? You're already so thin. You don't need to work out." Completely overlooking the fact that we have several members in our family who have different diseases and syndromes that are a result of not exercising regularly and not taking proper care of their health in their early years. I mean, my mom to this day still tries to convince me to not lift weights. And I think like these kinds of stories just go to show there's so much work to be done in terms of helping our community unlearn certain stigmas and narratives that they somehow picked up along the way and have been conditioned to believe. So I wanted to read some statistics that I found from a Stanford published article that I think are especially telling. So South Asians have a higher risk of heart and cardiovascular disease than any other ethnic group. South Asians comprise 25% of the world's population, but suffer over 50% of the world's cardiovascular deaths. And South Asians develop coronary artery disease up to 10 years earlier than the general population on average. Reading these statistics, it was not surprising, but it was still shocking at the same time. And again, the sad truth is that these are all things that can be prevented or even reversed with proper lifestyle changes, exercising, and eating well. So I would really implore you, if you haven't been, to start prioritizing your health. There's no better time than now to start. But your life is not going to change overnight. No one wakes up and lives this healthy, balanced, active life. It's not how it works. We are wired to need processes and periods of integration so that our brains can recalibrate to these new habits and new lifestyles. Something I really love encouraging with my health coaching clients is this approach of habit stacking, which is basically this idea that you pick some small habit to master, something that is doable and realistic for you. And once you get the hang of that, then you add something more to that. So for example, instead of saying you're going to go to the gym 5 times a week in this new year, when in reality, you've only hit the gym a handful of times in the entirety of all of last year, maybe you start by committing to a 30-minute walk 4 times a week. And then once you master that and make that a part of your routine, then maybe you make that walk daily. And then once you get the hang of that, then you can swap out 2 of those walks for 2 purposeful workout classes. And you just slowly build from there, and eventually it becomes a part of your lifestyle. But going from 0 to 100 is not sustainable, not realistic, and will most likely end up with you throwing in the towel. You have to take small steps and gradually build that into your lifestyle and routine. Okay, so I wanted to finish by sharing a couple pieces of advice and habits to work on if you're not already doing these things for the new year. Okay, one, eat a plant at every meal. Whether it's a fruit or a vegetable, make sure you have some colorful plant on your plate. If you don't like vegetables, this is just truly one of those like suck it up, you're an adult moments. You know, there's dozens and dozens of vegetables. Find one that you like and eat that. It can literally take 1 minute to cut up a vegetable and add it to your plate. My go-to vegetable that I always have in my fridge are cucumbers because it's so easy. I can peel it and cut it in less than 60 seconds and boom, I'm done. And the next one is start walking more. Okay, even if you work out or you don't work out, walking is one of the best tools for both overall health and weight loss, if weight loss is your goal. Okay, a 1 hour workout, if you think about it, only makes up 4% of your day. How you spend your day outside that 1 hour workout window has a much greater impact on your total daily energy expenditure, or your TDEE, which is another fancy term for saying your total calories burned in a day. So try to aim for 7,000 to 10,000 steps a day if you can. Just walk more, do more errands on foot, park your car further away at the grocery store, use a basket instead of a cart. Like, there's so many small things that you can do, and it may sound small, but they truly do add up. Okay, and the last thing I want to finish on is get into an exercise routine that you enjoy. Even if it's one time a week, doing it once a week is better than no times a week. Whether that's a dance class, a YouTube video, a group fitness class, a lifting routine, you know, find something that you enjoy, because if it's something you enjoy, you're far more likely going to stick with it. Okay, so don't wait until it's too late to start taking care of your health. It's, again, really hard to undo years and decades of poor habits. All right, you guys, that wraps up this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, I would so appreciate if you could leave a review on Apple. If you have suggestions of content or topics that you'd like to hear in 2022, please send me an email. My email is julie@theshapeoflab.com, or you can send a DM on Instagram. The Instagram handle is @thebrowngirl_podcast, and I'll be sure to leave all those links in the show notes. Okay, enjoy these last couple of days of the year. Have a safe and happy new year, and I will catch you next year.